Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host today, Ray Bolam, and with me is Dr. Howard Glickman, another episode of the series on the designed body. Today we're going to be talking about blood pressure. We all have some familiarity with blood pressure. Whenever we visit the doctor or whenever we've given blood, that's a measurement that's always taken for us, and so we have some familiarity with it. We do have some understandings, usually, that high blood pressure is not necessarily a good thing. But what exactly, Dr. Glickman, what exactly is blood pressure, and why does it seem to be so important for human life?
Well, Ray, that's a good question. Remember, you know, our body is a multicellular organism that's made up of matter. So it must follow the laws of nature, you know, the laws of physics and chemistry. And because of the laws of motion, the body needs a cardiovascular system to be able to pump blood to its cells with the chemicals that they need to live. So the blood pressure is basically the force that the blood applies against the wall of a blood vessel. Now, if you think about it, if you're familiar with how things work, you know, the left ventricle, we're talking mainly, you know, the systemic system, you know, the left ventricle will pump blood through the aortic valve into the big aorta and then into the large arteries. And then the blood goes from the large arteries to the smaller arteries, and then it goes to the arterioles, and then it goes to the capillaries. I'm Canadian, so I'm American now. I'm a dualist, but, you know, I've been told that, you know, you guys call it capillaries. I call it capillaries. It's like, you know, potato, potato.
Yeah, potato.
Anyways, and then the blood goes through the venules, and it comes back to the heart through the small and larger veins. So the question is, well, which one is the blood pressure? Because technically, there's blood in all of those vessels, and there's some force applied against those walls. But the blood pressure is understood to be the force of blood that's applied against the large arteries, okay?
Okay.
And it's the blood pressure that actually drives blood flow throughout the body. You know, think about, like, your garden hose, okay?
Okay.
You're holding a garden hose, and, you know, if it's got a lot, especially if you've got the nozzle partially blocked, you know, if it's got a lot of pressure, you've got a lot of water going in there, and you can feel that pressure against the wall, all right? And, you know, the more the pressure, you know, and you let the nozzle, there's going to be more flow. And the less pressure, there's going to be less flow. So the same thing applies in the body, and that basically the blood pressure determines blood flow, and that's why it's so important in life.
Well, as I mentioned earlier when we started, that most of us do have some familiarity with the concept of blood pressure. We usually associate it with two numbers that are expressed as one over the other. 90 over 60, 120 over 80 is usually described as what's normal or average. Average is the better word, I presume. So how is the blood pressure measured? And as a physician, what does that blood pressure mean to you?
Well, as we just said, the blood pressure is the force of blood that's applied against the walls of the large artery, okay? And usually it's measured in the brachial artery, okay, that's in the arm, all right? And the way we do it is we take a blood pressure cuff and put it over the upper arm, and we pump it up high enough to stop total blood flow through the artery. And then we listen at the elbow, the inside of the elbow, called the antecubital fossa with a stethoscope. And as we reduce the pressure in that cuff, as soon as we hear some blood shoot through, it will be like shh, shh. That tells us that's the first number, and that's called systolic blood pressure, which I'm going to explain. And then we continue to listen as the blood continues to flow through, and we continue to drop the pressure. And when the sound goes away, so what you'll hear is shh, 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 and then when the sound goes away, that's the lower number, and that's the diastolic pressure. So to understand what systolic blood pressure and diastolic blood pressure, what's really going on and what they represent, you need to understand something called the cardiac cycle. So what happens is the left ventricle pumps blood, and it goes out through the aortic valve into the aorta, and then it goes into the large arteries, okay? So it's shooting down that brachial artery, just come out of the heart just a split second ago. And the blood shoots down there, and that blood has already been pushed in there by the heart, and it's also got more volume, so it fills up the arteries. And it shoots down to the smaller arteries, and it goes down to the arterioles. And the arterioles are the vessels that allow the blood to go into the capillaries. That's where, you know, they're the guardians, okay? And what happens is you've got these smooth muscles that are around the arterioles, and they're pretty tight. You're usually tight. So the arterioles actually apply a sort of a resistance to the flow of blood as it goes down there. So what really happens is the blood shoots down there. Some of the blood gets through into the tissues, and the rest of it bounces back. All right, bounces back towards the heart. And when it goes back to the heart, well, the aortic valve is closed at this point, so it bounces back, it hits the aortic valve, and then it bounces, and then it shoots back down again. So, and then some of it goes through into the tissues, and some of it bounces back. So you get this going on during diastole. This is ping-ponging back and forth, right? And that, so what, because the blood actually ends up going through into the tissues, and it's, the blood's moving back and forth all the time, it's using up energy, so that starts to drop the blood pressure. So the top number, you know, the heart is about to pump, it reaches its lower level, right? And then the heart pumps again and shoots it back up, and it goes through this process, okay? Now, something in clinical practice that we really don't talk about, but I'm going to mention here because it does become important, because it's sort of a number we're going to, a benchmark number we're going to talk about, is something called the mean arterial pressure. And a lot of times that you'll see that in studies when people write about blood pressure and stuff. You'll see what it means when I explain why we're doing this. But the thing is that if the pressure is 90 over 60, the thing is that the systolic phase, when the heart pumps, represent about one-third of the cardiac cycle. So if you have a heartbeat once every second, 60 beats a minute, then one-third of a second is taken up for that heart pumping, and two-thirds is while it relaxes. So what researchers, what they like to do is they sort of say, well, we just need to give us the mean arterial pressure. What's the average of going on there? Well, because it's two-thirds during diastole and one-third during systole, the number ends up being, you know, somewhere in between, but a little lower than midway. So, for example, if someone's blood pressure is 90 over 60, their mean arterial pressure would be 70. So you see it's not halfway between, but closer. 140 or 80 would be 100. Well, the reason why this is important, because what we said is blood pressure drives blood flow, all right? If you got too much blood pressure, you may have too much blood flow. If you got too little blood pressure, you may not have enough blood flow. And this becomes very important for the brain, all right? If the mean arterial pressure is less than 50, which is like a pressure of 70 over 40, and you can imagine that's pretty low, all right? Well, you're not going to have enough blood flow. The brain can't compensate for that, and you know, you can pass out, all right? And if it continues, you can actually have seizures and die if it becomes much, much lower. And then on the other side of the coin, if you have a mean arterial pressure of greater than 170, I mean, that's really sky high. That's a pressure of like 250 over 130. I mean, you know, hopefully no one listening has ever had a pressure like that, but we do see people in those situations. And that what ends up happening in that situation is that there's too much blood flowing into the brain and into the tissues, and they swell in the brain. The brain will swell. And also, we got to remember that the blood vessels have physical limits. I mean, they can, you know, just like a water main or an oil pipe, if you got too much pressure on, they're going to blow, right? So when you see that, then sometimes the blood vessels, particularly in the brain, can erupt, and then you get a hemorrhage. You can die from that. So for me as a physician, assuming that there's no blood clots anywhere in the body, so blood pressure basically tells me about the adequacy of blood flow throughout the body, and also, as you mentioned earlier on, it's the patient's risk for heart and kidney disease and stroke, especially if the blood pressure is too high.
Yeah. So a lot of what you've covered here is to say simply that having a really low or really high blood pressure, we've got a heart stop, because that causes death, and if you indicate it can cause death pretty quickly, which none of us is looking forward to in that sort of way. So how does the body control blood pressure to keep us all alive?
Well, in order to answer that question, I just want to review what we just talked about, the cardiac cycle, the blood ping-ponging back and forth. All right, so I want you to imagine blood's coming out of the heart with some force. There's some volume coming out from the left ventricle. It goes into the arterial system, then shoots down there, bounces off those arterioles downstream, okay? So there's basically three factors. If you think about what's going on there, there's three main factors that affect the blood pressure. The first thing is the cardiac output. So as we said, how much blood's coming out of the heart, you know, at every time it pumps, and also with how much force, all right? Because you can see if it sends out a lot with a lot of force, the pressure is going to tend to be higher. And if it's a weak heart, not sending as much, maybe less blood, it's going to be a lower pressure, right? The second thing is, how much blood is in the arteries, okay?
Oh, okay.
Now, a lot of people don't realize that, you know, about 60 or 70% of your blood in the body is actually in your veins, all right? You got 5% in your heart, 5% in your lungs, maybe 5 or 10% in the capillaries, and maybe 10 or 15% in the arteries. So, you know, not all the blood in your body, in fact, even one-fifth or one-sixth of it, is actually in your arteries, all right?
Okay.
And that also is determined by how much water and salt is in your body as well. So they're all, it's all combined. So that's the second part. That's another thing that's important. And finally, the downstream resistance, okay? Obviously, if those arterioles were very relaxed and the arterioles were wide open, and every time the heart pumped, the blood just shot right through, you know, all into the tissues, then you're going to have a low blood pressure because all the blood's coming out of the arteries every time it pumps. You know, there has to be and then, of course, the other extreme would be, what if they're very, very, you know, tightly closed? Then your pressure is going to be very, very high because the blood keeps staying in the arteries. So understanding that those three are the main factors, the cardiac output, how fast and hard the heart pumps, how much blood's going out there, how much blood is actually in the arteries, and finally, the downstream resistance. So there's a lot of systems that affect blood pressure, but probably the three main ones One's called the sympathetic nervous system. So you've got a system that's the nervous system that has these sensors. You've got these sensors called baroreceptors, but these sensors in your arteries that are sending the arteries that send blood to your brain, and they're able to detect the blood pressure by the distension as the blood goes by. If it's got more force, it's going to distend these sensors more, and they're sending a message to the brain. And the brain responds by sending out a certain amount of a hormone called norepinephrine, or people may know this as noradrenaline. And then, you know, that has to attach the receptors out in the target tissues. And the sympathetic nervous system affects all three of these things we just talked about, the cardiac output, the arterial blood volume, and also the downstream resistance.
So once again, everything is being sensed all the time.
Right, right.
Okay.
So then you have another system is in the kidneys. All right, the kidneys they're always filtering the blood, and so as the blood flows through there, there's sensors there that are detecting the blood flow through there, and depending on how much is going on there, they put out various hormones. But you end up with a hormone called angiotensin II, but it's angiotensin. You think of the name angiotensin. Angio refers to a blood vessel, and tensin refers to pressures. So the kidneys eventually cause a certain hormone to be produced, and that also affects the arterial blood volume, but also the downstream resistance. It doesn't affect the cardiac output. And then finally, you have something called the water control system in the body, which,
right.
Because remember, we said the arterial blood volume is related to how much water is in the body.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have certain cells that are shrink sensitive in the brain. And when you're losing water, all the cells in the body are shrinking, but these ones are sensitive. They send messages to the brain, and actually to the pituitary gland, actually. And the pituitary gland then sends out a hormone called antidiuretic hormone. Well,
wow.
Antidiuretic hormone helps the body hold on to water, but it has another name. And another name for it is vasopressin. Vasopressin. Vaso referring to blood vessel, pressin applying to pressure. So it also has to join specific receptors in the blood vessels, and it has an effect on the vascular resistance. So these three systems are always working together, okay, to keep the blood pressure within the normal range. And the normal range would be 90 over 60, maybe up to 140 over 80, which would be equivalent, remember we talked the mean arterial pressure, between maybe 70 and 100, okay?
Okay.
So that's basically what, you know, is normal. Hey Ray, look at, you know, you've been asking me all these questions. Let me ask you one, okay?
Okay. Oh, sure, right. Go for it.
Okay, so what sometimes happens to you when you stand up quickly?
Well, I notice that particularly after I've been exercised or something, I sit down and I stand up right away. You can feel a bit dizzy, you get a little lightheaded, but it goes away in just a second or two. So I'm feeling this has something to do with blood pressure. So, Doc, what's really going on there? How does it happen? And how does my body fix the problem seemingly almost instantaneously?
Well, Ray, this is how we see how the laws of nature affect, you know, life, okay? And so gravity, you know, when gravity is a force of nature that pulls everything to the ground, even blood, all right? So when your head is – I'm assuming you're sitting up while we're talking here, but when your head is above your heart, gravity is making is preventing blood from going from your heart to your head. And so the blood pressure, technically the blood pressure at the level of your brain is lower than it is at the heart. But the heart's sending it out, you know, assuming we're both, as I said, we're sitting up and we haven't passed out. So the heart has already taken that into account, and it's already sending blood with enough blood pressure, with enough blood flow for us to be sitting here and talking. But if you bend over and you're doing something, you stand up very quickly, now we have some other effect of gravity. Gravity is also preventing blood from going back to the heart from your legs. All right, that can reduce the cardiac output. So it's sort of a 1-2 punch, a double whammy here. Combination of blood not being able to come back from your feet to your heart, and on top of that, gravity preventing blood from going from your heart to your brain. The two of them can sometimes combine to drop the pressure, that mean arterial pressure, under, you know, 50 or 60, and then that's when you start feeling dizzy. So here comes the problem. How do you solve this problem? You have to act fast, otherwise you're going to pass out.
Yeah.
There's no time to spare, because when it comes to passing out, gravity is an equal opportunity provider.
Yes, it is.
You know, that's what happens. So here's the problem. Okay, we just talked about the three systems. The sympathetic nervous system, right? We talked about the kidneys sending out, which uses norepinephrine, the kidneys, which use angiotensin II, and the water control system that uses vasopressin. Well, here's the problem. You can't use the other two systems because they use hormones, and it actually takes a few minutes for them to work. If it's going to take you a few minutes to solve the problem, you're going to be lying on the ground pretty fast, unconscious. Okay, you may even be having seizures and dying, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So the answer to that question is the sympathetic nervous system, because the nerves send messages at like one-third the speed of sound, okay, like 100 meters a second. As soon as the pressure starts dropping, those sensors in the main arteries go into your brain, they detect that drop, send the message to the brain. The brain sends out a whole bunch of norepinephrine. So what does norepinephrine do? Well, at first, it goes to receptors in the heart, and it tells them to increase their speed and strength of the heartbeat, so it increases cardiac output, right? Hey, that's a good thing. Then it goes to the veins, and it says, we need to send some blood over the arteries. So it does that. So that's a good thing. We said, blood volume, that increases. And one of the key things it does as well is it goes down to those arterioles downstream, and it makes them tighten, majorly tighten up their muscles to make it more resistant, so the blood is staying in the arteries. And these three things combine very quickly, so within a second or two, that's what we experience. That's what's really going on in your body when the dizziness goes away. So that's actually what happens. It all takes place in about a second or two, and so we can remain standing.
The amazing control here that's happening, again, a very integrated system of sensors, responders, integrators, both long-term responses and short-term quick responses to regulate one of the most important systems, our blood pressure. Without adequate blood pressure, as you said, we're going to die. Well, again, Dr. Glicksman, a very complex process here, very integrated one. Any questions for Mr. Darwin today?
Well, to remind us, Darwin said that, you know, natural selection acting on random variation was all that was needed. In other words, you know, chance and the laws of nature alone could bring about life. You didn't need to have an intelligent input, no mind at work, or to design it, you know. But, you know, we have to remember that Darwin and his contemporaries only knew how life looks, not how it actually works. They had no idea what we just talked about, okay, and specifically how it works within the laws of nature. So like what we talked about today, for our brain cells to get what they need to live and work properly, they need to have a cardiovascular system with enough blood pressure to generate enough blood flow. Otherwise, we'd be passing out every time we tried to stand up. So here's some questions I would ask of him and his modern-day supporters. You know, let's first look at the macro perspective. In order for the blood pressure to be under control, you need three systems. The sympathetic nervous system, the kidney system we talked about, and the water control system, right? It's irreducibly complex, you know, and if you don't have either of them, you pass out. So, you know, where did the information come from to produce each of the systems, and which came first? And how did a multi-system organism or multicellular organism like us develop over time? Mm-hmm. And then we can drill down to the micro level and just look at each of these systems, which, you know, you commented on, that the sympathetic nervous system has the receptors or it has sensors in the arteries to detect the blood pressure. Then it has to produce norepinephrine, and then the norepinephrine needs a receptor out in the heart and the blood vessels to do what it's supposed to do. And same with the kidney. It makes angiotensin. It has a sensor to detect the blood flow, makes angiotensin too, and then it needs the angiotensin II receptors in the blood vessels as well. And same with the water control, okay? You got the sensors that are shrink sensitive in the brain, and they end up making producing ADH or vasopressin, and then you need the receptors out in the tissue. So each of these systems is irreducibly complex. Mm. And, you know, without them, so how could they all come together at once?
Yeah.
You know, they all have to be together and doing what they're doing. But finally, let's look at this from an engineering perspective. Standing up too quickly can cause you to pass out from not having enough blood pressure. Obviously, the body needs more than just knowing what its blood pressure is. It has to know at what blood pressure it actually will pass out before it can prevent it from happening. It has to know. If the pressure starts dropping under 70, 60, 50, we got problems here, okay? Houston, we got a problem. So it also has to know. It also has to know the laws of physics, because it has to know what has to be done to correct the situation. It has to know what to do.
Yeah.
And finally, it has to have to know its own capacity to increase the blood pressure fast enough to make sure it can correct the situation in time. It's like knowing when you have to put on the brakes to prevent yourself from crashing into something. So what do we say? The blood pressure is directly related to the cardiac output, the arterial blood volume, and the peripheral vascular resistance. And what does the sympathetic nervous system do? It makes the heart pump harder and faster to raise the cardiac output enough. It makes the blood move from the veins to the arteries to increase the arterial blood volume. And it tightens up the muscles around your arterioles to raise the vascular resistance enough. These aren't random actions.
No, they're not.
But specific to what's needed to correct the situation. And they have to be done fast and well enough to bring the pressure up over 50 units. Otherwise, you're going to be finding yourself on the ground unconscious. So where did the information come from? And how does our body know the laws of nature, all these sort of things? And as we said, this is Goldilocks in action. If the things aren't perfect, we die. And it's only just one of many other things that have to be controlled by the body. So to me, it's more plausible to realize that, you know, everything we talked about today came through a mind at work, intelligent design. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, the more we learn about how life actually works, the more it seems to me that Darwinism is actually dead. But its proponents just don't know it yet.
Yep.
So like Jonathan Wells tells us in his latest book, much of what evolutionary biology tells us is essentially zombie science.
Well, I'm often like to make the statement that if Darwin was able to know what we know today, he never would have proposed this theory in the first place.
I suspect that would be the case, yes.
Yeah. Well, once again, Dr. Glicksman, thank you for being our guest today on ID the Future. I'm Ray Boland, and thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.